Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll discuss suicide prevention with the Minneapolis VA Hospital, meet the team at ESGR, that's Minnesota's employer support of the Guard and Reserve, and check in with the Minnesota National Guard's senior enlisted leader. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Deputy Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Brigadier General Sandy Best.
It's my privilege to serve with fellow women veterans and recognize and celebrate their service and sacrifice. Even before the Declaration of Independence was signed, women were serving as nurses and cooks in military camps in support of the Revolutionary War. Their invaluable contributions span the preservation of the Union and two world wars. Despite nearly two centuries of service, it wasn't until 1948 that women were allowed to become permanent members of the military. Having the honor of volunteering to serve was just the beginning. Women service members spent the next seven decades overcoming obstacles and breaking down barriers. During Korea and Vietnam, they deployed to forward combat zones and aboard ships. In 1976, they were admitted to four of the five service academies. By 1993, women pilots were flying combat missions. And finally, in 2016, the Department of Defense opened all combat positions to women service members. Please join me in honoring these extraordinary women, past and present, as we celebrate their resiliency and exceptional service to the United States of America.
Thank you, General Best. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Our topic for the first half of today's show is suicide prevention program within the VA and promoting the public health model to prevent veteran suicide. And joining us to discuss that is Eric Wittenberg, suicide prevention coordinator, and Jesse Fow, RN and community engagement and partnership coordinator at the Minneapolis VA. Eric and Jesse, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having us, Tom.
Yep, good to be here.
Eric, I want to start with you. I understand you're an Army veteran. Can you tell us a little bit about your time in the service?
Yes, I active duty Army from 2008 to 2012. I was a 19 Delta Cavalry Scout assigned to a striker unit out of Vilsack, and we did a combat deployment to Afghanistan in 2012, right around the Kandahar region in southern Afghanistan.
And how long have you been part of the VA?
So I had a break in service for my military time. So total, we're going at about 10 years.
10 years, very good. And Jesse, I understand you served in the Army as well.
I did. I did 4 years with the Michigan Army National Guard. I deployed to 2005 in Iraq. I served as a 92 Alpha, which is an automated logistics specialist. And then I cross-trained as a combat lifesaver and did that while I was in Iraq. So that's what got me interested in going to pursuing nursing school when I was done with my enlistment.
And how long have you been at the VA?
I've been at the VA for 5 years.
5 years, very good. I hope with your both of you, with your backgrounds, I would imagine that you enjoy working with the veterans out there.
Absolutely. It's like a way to continue serving.
Exactly.
Eric, we want to talk about suicide prevention today, and I understand that there's a three-pronged approach to suicide prevention at the VA. Can you explain that to us?
Yes. When the program started roughly about 13 years ago, they broke it down into three sections. So the first one would be dealing with the veteran side, so making sure that those that are at high risk for suicide have enhanced outpatient care, they get the services they need, they get the screening and assessments, which is obviously the important piece to making sure we keep our veterans safe. Then we do a facility approach where we train and educate the staff. A lot of folks aren't in mental health, so we make sure that they have the tools and resources in order to know what to look for. If somebody comes in for a dental exam, right, they say some things that may mean that they're having suicidal ideation, and then they can get the help that way as well. And then finally, the third approach is community outreach, going into the public and educating them. Anywhere from doing sportsman shows where we have a table with gun locks, or we go to the Minnesota Social Work Association conference and have a table of literature and resources so we can help train those other providers in the community as well.
Very good. We're speaking about suicide prevention today on Minnesota Military Radio. And Jesse, I understand that you're currently working at the VA as a community engagement and partnership coordinator to develop community coalitions and promote the public health model of suicide. How does the public health model fit into the VA's approach?
So the VA adopted the public health model a couple of years ago to look at suicide more comprehensively, not just from the person that's in crisis or struggling, but the environment that that person is in. So what can we do for that person's environment, their community? How can we assist their family? How can we educate and train their employees to be looking out for their risk factors to kind of support and cushion that veteran all around from all different angles? So the public health approach really does look at it from like a universal, selected, and indicated way and a more broad spectrum.
So, Jesse, can we get into that a little deeper? How can the community coalition, putting that together, impact the rate of suicide among veterans?
So, well, hopefully we can decrease the rate of suicide by veterans. That's the work that we're doing out in the community right now. And what coalitions can really do, kind of like that ground level work, like boots on the ground, doing the work, contacting stakeholders, changing public policy, lobbying, working with communities and employers to provide education, training, resources. That's the things that they need to help support our veterans where they work, live, and recreate so that communities can help veterans thrive.
And Eric, can you tell us, give us a little, some facts here? How big of an issue is this? How many veterans, how many Americans are we losing, and how many veterans are we losing? Can you give us a few stats on that?
Yeah, so a lot of different agencies have their statistics, but we're going by the 2017 veterans statistics, which is the most recent. So currently we still have about 22 veterans per day who die by suicide. That number comes from veterans, and then they add in a reservist, active duty, and National Guard, so that's where we get that number. Also, about 70% of veterans who die by suicide involve a firearm. So that's why we're really pushing out gun safety, gun locks, access to lethal means. We ask everybody, do you have a gun? If so, would you be willing to have somebody, a loved one, take care out of your hands for a while? Just with that 70% number, we see that as the highest means for suicide. And then interesting that the older veterans, 55 and older, Vietnam era veterans, have the highest number of those who die by suicide. But it's the younger veterans, the OEF, OIF population, who has the highest rate. And the difference basically is that the Vietnam veterans, there are so many more of them, and their number is pretty large.
So is it accurate to say that the VA has figured out methodology and some things they can do to help prevent suicide?
Yes, of course they can. Getting the coalitions and the community partnership is one of those huge pieces. There's some policy and some initiatives that have come from the national office on how to screen. There's some special education and training that the VA kind of has developed from their clinical side, which is out in Colorado. They have a specific kind of research and study department. And then they pass those down to us in hopes that we can implement those and really start to minimize those numbers that we're seeing.
Very good. Eric, Jesse, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more about suicide prevention with the VA and Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and today we've been talking about the suicide prevention program within the VA and promoting the public health model to prevent veteran suicide. My guests have been Eric Wittenberg, suicide prevention coordinator, and Jesse Fowl, community engagement and partnership coordinator, and also an RN. And Eric, I want to come to you. This whole business of mental health and the issue of our veterans being out in the community, Most veterans are proud veterans, and they don't ask for help. And I'm a Vietnam veteran. Some of my fellow Vietnam veterans are retiring from work, and they got some of the old demons coming back, and they're thinking about the war. And if we observe a family member, a veteran, a friend that seems to be different, or something has changed, how do we go about asking the question? How do you just come right out and say, "Are you having health issues? Are you thinking about suicide?" How do you bring this up?
Yep, so you hit the nail on the head there. A lot of veterans, right, there's a stoicism to that. They don't want to ask for help. Often they suffer in silence. So just like you said, if you're noticing that somebody who is upbeat, social, or just was in a better mood overall, and now they're isolating, maybe they're drinking a little more, they're not as responsive to phone calls and emails, yeah, we all have a right as people to check in with them. You don't need any special skills or any license to ask, "Hey, how are you doing? I've noticed that you've been down or haven't answered my calls." And anytime you get a sense where they might be thinking of death, or they make those statements of, "I just can't go on any longer," or "the pain's too much," whether it's emotional or physical, we teach, like you said, just directly ask, "Are you thinking of taking your life? Are you thinking of suicide?" That really is the only way to ask the question, is directly. It can be a tough call, and a lot of people don't ask because they're afraid of what if they get a yes, right? So I think the most important piece is just be with that person, listen to them. 911 is always available. The Veterans Crisis Line is helpful. Emergency departments run 24/7. So if you do get a yes and they're not safe, you can use any of those resources.
And, of course, the suicide hotline is 1-800-273-8255. Press 1. Jesse, the American Legion here in Minnesota has been doing a thing all during the COVID-19 called Buddy Checks, where they're encouraging all of their members to call their friends, their buddies that might be home alone, might be having some mental health issues, might be thinking of suicide. It's still a tough call, but it seems to me the Buddy Checks can be kind of a first line to see if there's a problem. And if they do say yes, what's the next step? What do you do?
So I think a buddy check, like you said, is very instrumental of making sure that our battle buddies are doing okay, especially during this time of COVID and social isolation and quarantine and things like that. We definitely have to be checking in on our neighbors and our veteran friends and family to make sure that they are doing okay, because a lot of them aren't able to get out of their homes. The next step would be if you did ask somebody and they said, "Yes, I'm thinking about suicide," or "Yes, I'm really struggling and I don't know what to do," a friend or a family member could always use the Veterans Crisis Line and run through what's happening with the Veterans Crisis Line, and the Veterans Crisis Line will help triage that situation. If it's something more imminent, like the veteran says, "I'm thinking about suicide and I just can't see any way out and I'm doomed," then you could offer to call 911. You can send a welfare check to that veteran's home, or you yourself can try to pick up that veteran and bring them to the VA, to bring them to their local ER or urgent care, so that way they can get immediate help.
Jesse, how important is it to take immediate action?
It's incredibly important, because we don't want to have those missed opportunities. We don't want to say, "Oh, well, that person says they feel stuck all the time," or "that person makes statements like that." With the public health model and the community approach, we're really trying to educate people that you just have to take everything serious. You have to take every comment serious, and take the situation serious and for face value, and not just think, "Well, they've said it before, so nothing, I don't have to worry about it." Taking those immediate action steps are really the things that we can do to help save somebody's life.
So what you're
saying
is,
in addition to that, they've asked veterans who have made a suicide attempt, how long before you are having thoughts to the action, and super surprised by the staff, but about 30% said it was less than 5 minutes. So they had a thought of suicide, and within 5 minutes they took action. So once again, that immediate check-in or that immediate help needs to happen.
So don't wait till tomorrow. Get over there. Get on the phone. Get to 1-800-273-8255.
Exactly.
Press 1 and start the discussion and start the healing.
And if family members want to have more information, we provide SAFE trainings in the community now through our coalition, so they can look for more information that way. But we also have mentalhealth.va.gov, as well as BeThereForVeterans.com. BeThereForVeterans.com is the Veterans Crisis Line website. It's got a lot of resources on it, a lot of videos on how to talk to family. The SAVE training is also available on psycharmor.org. You just sign up and create a free account, and you have access to a lot of military culture videos as well as the SAVE training. It's 24 minutes of your time. And if you can take that 24 minutes of your time to learn about the steps and resources that are available and the risk factors that are out there, then you could do us a big favor in helping us look out for veterans.
We're talking about suicide prevention program with the Minneapolis VA today on Minnesota Military Radio. Jesse and Eric, we've just got a few minutes left. I understand that Minnesota has agreed to be part of the governor's challenge to prevent veteran suicide. Can you tell us, one of you tell us what that looks like?
So I'm on the task force for the governor's challenge, and the governor's challenge is a joint organization from SAMHSA, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration out of Rockville, Maryland, as well as our Office of Mental Health and Suicide Prevention at our big VA in D.C. They've partnered with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And what this will look like is it's increased collaboration and bringing together all the entities in the state that are doing the work to prevent suicide. So that way we're not siloing our efforts. We're coming together and collaborating on our efforts to leverage public policy, to leverage healthcare systems, to provide the education and training that organizations and healthcare systems need to be looking out for their veterans.
So you're working with other agencies such as the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the Minnesota National Guard to be in unison when you're trying to attack the problem of suicide prevention.
Exactly. And it's important to note that 14 out of 20 veterans do not use the VA for services. So they're not using their clinics in the community that are VA clinics. They're not using the vet centers, and they're not going to a VA hospital for their care. And so we need to try to engage the community more, and the governor's challenge is a great way to do that. So that way all community partners can be looking out for veterans as well.
Thanks, Jesse. Eric, we just got a couple of minutes left. When we find a veteran that's having some issues and they've called the hotline, 1-800-273-8255, press 1, once they get to the Minneapolis VA, is it inpatient care? Is there outpatient care? Is it a combination?
Yeah, it all depends on the severity and the level. A lot of the calls that go to the VCL, they're all licensed clinicians. They can kind of mitigate those and deal with the issue at hand. Oftentimes we get a follow-up just to check with them, or if they have an assigned provider here, they will call them. Otherwise, there are a lot, as Jesse said, where they need to do a welfare check or a rescue, which means sending the police and the ambulance. And then they are brought to our emergency department for just triage, and sometimes they stay, you know, inpatient for 3 days or so. Oftentimes they just kind of need a little med tweak, and they can be discharged the next day. But, yeah, it all varies depending on the need. So don't be afraid to call the VCL because you think the cops are going to come and take you away. It's just a great resource for the veteran, family, and friends just to figure out how to get this guy or this gal some help when they're in crisis.
Thanks, Eric. We've got just a few seconds left, Jesse, but what I'm hearing you tell us today is keep an eye on your veterans. Make sure they're well. If they're having some kind of an issue, talk to them. If they need help, call the suicide prevention line. And the Minneapolis VA has the ability and the knowledge to help them to get past whatever's causing the issues.
Exactly. We're a trauma-informed center. We are veteran-centered care, so we are a great place for veterans to seek care. Also, seeking care in your community is a great thing to do, and what community members can do is provide that connection and provide that support to their fellow veterans that are their family, their friends, their loved ones. It all comes back down to that connection and that support that's needed.
Eric and Jesse, great messages today. Thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for letting us share our message. Yep.
That was Eric Wittenberg and Jesse Fow from the Minneapolis VA Hospital on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to meet the team at the ESGR. That's Minnesota's Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet the team from the ESGR, Minnesota's Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Have you served honorably? Are you a Minnesota resident? And are you interested in higher education? If you answered yes to these questions, you may be eligible for education benefits in Minnesota. The Minnesota GI Bill program provides post-secondary educational assistance to eligible Minnesota veterans, non-veterans who have served in the military, and eligible spouses and children. The purpose of this bill is to get Minnesota veterans back to work. The plan starts with education, and the first step is finding the financial assistance available to get them there. For full eligibility requirements, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said earlier, we're going to meet the team from the employer support of the Garden Reserve here in Minnesota. And joining me now is Tom Simonette, Chair of the Employer Supporters Garden Reserve, and Bob Boone, the ESGR Boss Live Coordinator. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tom.
Colonel, I want to start with you. Can you give us a little background? How many years did you serve in the Air Force Reserve and the Minnesota Air National Guard?
I started my career with the military back in 1972, working as a jet mechanic for aircraft with two engines at Cannon Air Force Base and Homestead. And then I kept on serving over time and finished the 36-year career with the Guard in Minnesota with the 133rd Airlift Wing, and then finally as an emergency preparedness liaison officer through the Air Force Reserve. And I retired in January of 2014.
At the rank of?
I retired as a rank of colonel in the Air Force.
Very good, sir. And Colonel, can you tell us, how did you get to the employer support of the Garden Reserve? I know you've been chairing that for a few years now.
Well, I started when I was a reservist, both in the Guard and the Reserve. I heard about the program, and so I submitted my boss for a Patriot Award. And how employer support of the Garden Reserve took care of my boss and made sure that they were recognized for the fine work that they did in supporting my military career, I realized just how important that program was. And I started out as a volunteer presenting Patriot Awards to great companies around the state of Minnesota, and then just slowly but surely got involved more and more with the leadership team that was installed or with ESGR during the 2000 and 2010 time period.
Very good, sir. And Bob Boone, I understand you served 38 years as an enlisted soldier, an NCO with the Minnesota Army National Guard, and served in the position of Command Sergeant Major for the Red Bull Division and as State Command Sergeant Major for Minnesota. That was quite a career, sir. How did you get over to the ESGR as Boss Lift Coordinator?
Well, quite frankly, I was honored to be inducted into the Hall of Fame for the Minnesota Army National Guard in 2011. And one of the people attending was Brigadier General Nick Ostapenko, who at that time was chair of ESGR. And Nick and I had been friends since I was a supply sergeant at the officer candidate school, and he was an officer candidate. And he asked me if I would be interested in ESGR, and I said yes, and went through the background and served as a volunteer for Region 4, and then was asked by Tom if I would come in and work on making Boss Lift a stellar program for ESGR, and did that in coordination with Camp Ripley, the 133rd, and the 934th Air Force Reserve Wing. So my start is that way.
Sergeant Major, I know General Ostapenko, and he can be very persuasive, so you didn't have a chance, Sergeant Major. But it's a great organization. And Colonel Simonette, can you tell us, what is the mission of the ESGR?
ESGR has three basic pillars that we look at. And the first pillar is recognition, like I mentioned, with the award to my company. We go out and we recognize those companies through a cheering program. They start off with a Patriot Award, and those great companies we then recognize with an above and beyond, and there's only 25 that we select each year in the state of Minnesota. And out of those 25, we then send off to the national level our 3 to 5 best companies to vie for the Freedom Award, which is offered by the Department of Defense. The second pillar is the educational piece of the Uniformed Services Employment Reemployment Rights Act that was brought into law in 1994. And that is there to protect both the service member and the employer on the rights that they then have as individuals within the uniformed services. And then the final one is the Ombudsman Program, which is a mediation group that helps both sides of the fence understand the law. And we're there for the law to make sure that individuals are following the law and come to the resolution that makes sure that both parties understand what their rights and responsibilities are.
We're speaking about the ESGR, Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, on Minnesota Military Radio. Thank you, Colonel. Sergeant Major, we've been on the air now for about 10 years, and we're talking about all of these deployments that the Minnesota National Guard has had going back to 2001. You served as a state command sergeant major. How important is it for the Minnesota National Guard to have great relationships with all of our civilian employers all across the state?
It's an extremely important part, and I like to look at ESGR as one of the spokes in the wheel of support. There are many other programs that are equally important, but particularly if you don't have your employer and your family on board, a deployment can be very, very difficult, and the return can be equally difficult, if not more difficult. So we do a number of things to help those employers understand. And we have a military outreach director. We have the employer outreach director. We have the omnibus director, as Tom mentioned. We have an awards director, and we have a public affairs director. And each one of those help coordinate our effort to get the message out to employers and reserve component service people so that they do understand USERRA. Because most often when there is a difficulty, it's because of a misunderstanding. So our educational piece to help both reserve component service members and employers understand the law is very critical to a successful deployment and a successful return home.
And Colonel Simonette, I've helped you with some of your award ceremonies, and some of the companies that you had out there, their companies and schools and law enforcement agencies, some of the who's who in Minnesota, and it just seems to me the relationship between those companies and the ESGR here in Minnesota is extraordinarily very good, sir.
Thank you, because we pride ourselves in Minnesota, and just to, right now we have three companies that are vying for the Freedom Award, and we're waiting for the announcement to come from the Secretary of Defense. And we have our fingers crossed that our three will be in the final 15.
So, Colonel, every year, this year's a little different from most years because we've had the COVID-19, and I think you've had to delay or cancel your award ceremony, but I'm sure you're certainly looking forward to a more normal year in 2021.
We are looking for a normal year, but right now we're also in the process of trying to find a way to recognize the 2020 awardees, and we're going to do a virtual awards program where we gather the 25 individuals that won and make sure that they get their due recognition.
Very good, sir. I'm glad to hear that you're finding a way to do that. Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the employer support, the Guard and Reserve, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with Tom Simonette, who is the chair of the employer support of the Guard and Reserve, and Bob Boone, who is the ESGR Boss Lift Coordinator. And Sergeant Major, I want to come to you, Boss Lift. I remember being on a couple of those almost 10 years ago, but it seemed like that went away. Have you revived that program? Can you explain to us what it is and why you do it?
Yes, I can. When Tom came to me, Boss Lifts were in a pretty weak position. And as chair, he asked me if I would be willing to take that on and try to breathe some new life into it. So we did. And part of that came from my time as a 34th Division CSM and State Sergeant Major. I knew the people at Camp Ripley quite well. I knew the folks at the 133rd quite well. And what a Boss Lift does is we use helicopters, primarily Chinooks, sometimes Blackhawks, or we use C-130s to transport employers from wherever in the state of Minnesota to where their soldiers are training at Camp Ripley for the most part. And we fly them up. We give them a briefing on ESGR. We give them a briefing on USERRA. And then in coordination with the unit or the battalion, we take them out to the field where the soldiers are training. And we try to make sure they can have a meal, either a box lunch or an MRE, whatever the unit prefers, and be with their soldiers when they're out in the field so that they can understand what it is that their employee is doing when they are taking time away from work. So that's a very critical component. We've done a couple of unique ones. We flew two Chinooks down to the Fagan Air Museum. And those folks were very kind to us, gave us a hangar, gave us full use of the facility. And we had just a wonderful time with about 65 employers that day. We've also done one where we did a Boss Lift on a Coast Guard ice cutter, the Cutter Alder, up in Duluth, Minnesota. And we had about 25 employers on that particular one. So it's one of the efforts that we do to get employers engaged with their soldiers or their airmen or whatever component it is, and help them to understand what it is they do when they're gone and help them understand USERRA.
Sergeant Major, I've been on a couple of those Boss Lifts, and those employers come back with their eyes wide open, and they learn a lot on those trips. So very good for getting that going again, strong, sir. Colonel Simonet, I want to come back to you. One of the really important things is USERRA, which is the law that protects the rights of our military. When they go off on deployments, they have the right to come back and get their job back. And that's really a basic tenet of what you do as the chair of ESGR.
That is correct. And USERRA is the guiding force that we follow. It is a law that was out of the 1970s, where the Guard and Reserve were the strategic units out there, and kids were coming back from deployments or from their training, and they didn't have that protection. They would lose their job because they were serving their country. And in 1994, they codified it so that there was protections, but it's protections on both sides of the fence. There are requirements that the companies must follow in deployments and making sure that the jobs are there, but there's also requirements for the service members that they must follow. They can't take advantage of the law and say, hey, I'm going to drill and not really go and take advantage of their employer. So our organization is there to help both sides understand that law and follow the law, because it is so important that our employers out there recognize the value that the service members bring to the table, and that value then comes with other individuals. So we're hoping these companies will then hire other Guard and Reserve members into their force to just make their companies even better.
Very good, sir. Colonel, we've just got about a minute left. I know that you've got a wonderful relationship with all of the employers across the state of Minnesota. Did you want to speak to that for a moment before we're finished?
I can't tell you how great I feel about the employers within Minnesota. From the employer that I worked with for 34 years and how they support it, and also the employers that I see through this organization of employer support of the Guard and Reserve, we are blessed in Minnesota with a strong support of our reserve community leadership. And I look at it as we all serve. It's a byline that we use in employer support of the Guard and Reserve that we all do serve, because as soon as a service member goes off and serves his country, somebody back at home is either taking care of those chores around the house or around the work table at the employer. And so I can't stress enough the importance that the employers play in the defense of our country.
Colonel, Sergeant Major, I'd like to thank you both for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much.
That was Tom Simonette, Chair of the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, and Bob Boone, the ESGR Boss Lift Coordinator on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Leader of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
You bet, Tom. Hey, thanks for having me.
Sergeant Major, we've had a season of change, it seems, the last few weeks or month. Our Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen, took a position at Guard Bureau and got promoted to a three-star Lieutenant General.
That was just this Monday.
That was quite an opportunity for him, and says something big about how the Guard Bureau thought of Minnesota's Adjutant General the last few years.
Well, that and just what the whole state has been able to do, both on the Army and the Air side, just phenomenal. Sometimes you say it's like an embarrassment of riches how well Minnesota represents the Army National Guard and the Air National Guard, nationally, internationally.
And, sir, as soon as he moved on as Adjutant General and became the 22nd Director of the Guard Bureau, then the governor had an opportunity to take a look at the candidates and to announce yesterday that we're going to have a new Adjutant General.
Absolutely. That was Brigadier General Menke. And, he had just been up here not that long ago, I guess, when I first started as the Chief of Staff. So, it was three great choices that the governor had to go through and look at. And, I don't envy him at all, because it's always tough to trying to make a decision in that regard. But, it's going to be great having Brigadier General Menke serving as the Adjutant General for potentially up to the next 7 years.
And General Menke stepping into a new position, Adjutant General for the state of Minnesota. He's going to be a busy man for a while. He's going to need your help, Sergeant Major.
And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great. It was great serving for General Jensen, and it's going to be great serving with and for General Menke.
Sergeant Major, busy time in the Minnesota National Guard. We've got airmen deployed. We've got soldiers over in the Middle East. We've got soldiers in the Horn of Africa. We've got soldiers who just came back from the National Training Center, and a whole load of equipment that was that they used out in the Mojave Desert that's on its way back up to Camp Ripley to be put back in shape so it's ready to go on a deployment after the first of the year. Busy time.
Oh, absolutely. We just had deployment ceremonies the last two weekends, one for the 34th MP Company and the other for Charlie Battery 10194 Field Artillery that are both heading out later this year, one to Afghanistan and another to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And, yes, we've got a lot of equipment coming back from the desert right now being railheaded. The great news there is between our logisticians and our maintainers, they did a fantastic job keeping the equipment running. So it's coming back in almost as good of a condition as it left, which is fairly unheard of going into those really challenging icing conditions at the National Training Center.
You're really saying something there, Sergeant Major, when you had your soldiers out there putting it into rugged use out in the Mojave Desert. So if their maintenance men could take care of them along the way, they're doing a great job.
Absolutely, and that is a very unforgiving terrain and temperature out there. So a phenomenal job on all.
Sergeant Major, I understand that you've got 80 soldiers participating in the Comprehensive Soldier Fitness Course. Can you tell us what that's about?
Absolutely. So it's an opportunity for our soldiers that let's say maybe got a little bit out of shape or have had some challenges to get back into shape so that they can potentially be retained in the Army National Guard. But, you know, the long game of it is that we're actually looking, even if they elect not to stay in the Guard, hopefully we can give them some healthy habits to kind of benefit them throughout their life. So we work on the physical attributes. We work on nutritional attributes. We work on, you know, some of the things as far as resiliency. And it's just an all-around great course to assist our soldiers, you know, if they want to stay in the Guard. But, you know, like I said, it's all out of compliance, either in height and weight or the Army physical fitness test, which goes away in October, but they still have to be passing on that in order to be retained. Just gives them a great opportunity to get back into that shape that they need to be in.
Sergeant Major, I want to thank you for joining us again today on Minnesota Military Radio.
No, I appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to speak with you and your audience, Tom.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Eric Wittenberg and Jesse Fow from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, Tom Simonette and Bob Boone from the ESGR, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally Minnesota's Deputy Adjutant General, Brigadier General Sandy Best. Please join us next week as we talk about the Minnesota National Guard's Women's Leadership Forum and get the latest on claims and outreach from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.